When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Views expressed here are not supported by and do not reflect those of the Evening Rush Network. Viewer's discretion is advised.
Hello, hello. Good evening, everyone. My name is Stacy, and you are listening and also watching Stacy Talks Money podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share. You can follow me on Instagram, Stacy Talks Money podcast. If you want to email me, you can email me at stacytalksmoney@gmail. If you want to be generous, you can also donate to the Cash App, which is Stacy Talks Money Podcast on Cash App. So this evening, I'm going to be speaking about budgeting, the right way to budget, the most effective way that, you know, I think people should start their budgeting journey if you haven't already started your budgeting. Now is a good time to start. I know we had a rough couple of months. People were just spending. I know a lot of people, tax season is over. I'm glad about that. Now I get to be normal again. Tax season is over for me. So I know a lot of people got their tax returns. And, you know, most times people just spend their tax money without thinking about, you know, maybe I should invest it, get some stocks, bonds, you know, invest in your business. If you have a business, you shouldn't just, you know, get your tax money and just blow it. Cause, you know, just think about it. If you never got the tax money, what would you do? You'd have to find a way, you know, to do those extra things that you wanted to do. So I'm just gonna, you know, give you guys some tips on the right way to budget. So now, when you're starting a budget for yourself, it's best that you start a month before. So let's say you want to start budgeting for May. You should have started already, or you still have time. You could start, you know, in April, and then you can start budgeting for May, or even if you want to start budgeting for June. But it's always best that you start at least a month or a couple of weeks before you actually want to start your budgeting journey. Okay, so make sure you do it at least a month before or a couple of weeks before the month you actually start. You want to start budgeting. So you should practice budgeting to zero, which means you should track every dollar that you earn, giving it a place in your budget. You shouldn't have a single dollar to spare, meaning, you know, if you budget yourself $20 for the week for lunch, you should spend up until the $20 and that's it. If there's anything over, great. But you should try to, you know, budget down to the penny, meaning with nothing left over. That's what that means. Also, you should use any budgeting. There's a lot of budgeting apps and tools that you can use to help you with your budgeting. There's a company called Mint that's very good. They have a budgeting app and tool that you can use. That's also through Intuit or TurboTax. That's one of their products. It's called Mint. And it's very, very good for budgeting. I use it myself. But there's a lot of other apps out there that you can use for budgeting if you need assistance. Some people can just do like an Excel sheet and they're good, but some people actually need like an app to actually help them to do their budgeting, and that's fine too. Okay, so you should also establish your needs versus your wants. So basically that just means that you should do what's called, this is what I use for myself personally, it's called the 50-30-20 rule. 50-30-20 rule. Now that means 50% for your essentials, 20% into a savings, and 30% for a non-essentials. That's typically how you should look at it. You know, 50% you would say is, let's say, your rent. 30% is everything else. Your other bill, essentials, I would say rent, bills, and the 30% would be the non-essentials, and 20% should always go towards your savings. That would be the best route to go. So basically, when you say your needs, that's anything that's crucial for your basic physical, mental, and financial well-being. It's food, it's rent, it's any kind of debt repayment, credit cards, things like that. You have to repay these things because it's essential. So these things should always be factored in to your budget. And another tool that's also good for helping you to calculate your budget, something that I also use, is Credit Karma. And again, I'm plugging into it. It's a product of Intuit, and it's called Credit Karma. They actually have a budgeting calculator tool that you can use, and it can actually show you how you can actually break down your budget. So it's called, you just go to Credit Karma's website and look for the budgeting calculator tool. They also have a debit card or savings account. You could also use that too if you want to, you know, have an account with Credit Karma. But they have a lot of different budgeting tools. They have good savings tools. So definitely check it out. And it's Credit Karma. And so like I said, it's the 50-30-20 rule. 50% is for essentials. 20% is for your savings or to pay your debt. And 30% is non-essential items. Those are just things that you feel, you know, going out, going to the movies, you know, entertainment. Those are things that, you know, you just want to splurge on sometimes, but not all the time. Another thing that's essential for you to help with your budgeting is to keep your bills and your receipts organized in case you need to refer back to them, in case you need to dispute anything. You always keep your bills, never throw away receipts or even your bills. If you still like get bills in the mail for your utilities, it's always best that you keep a copy of it or either scan it to your computer or take a picture of it. A lot of the budgeting apps, they have that where you can actually take a picture of your bills and kind of store it. You should never throw away your bills or your receipts, especially if it's a large purchase. I would suggest that you keep a copy of your receipt, especially anything if it's at least over $50. You should hold on to the receipt. And you just make sure you have a file for these documents. If you want to physically take a picture of it to your phone or scan it to your computer, but you should always keep your bills and your receipts, your utility bills, your household bills, and any purchases that you make over $50. And the next step for budgeting, you should prioritize your debt repayment. And when I say debt repayment, that's your credit cards, your loans. If you have secured loans, regular loans, credit cards, any kind of revolving credit, even if you have mortgage, you should try to keep your utilization below 30%. So I know most times they say you should use your credit card at least 30% of the balance. I think it's best if you use your credit card at least 10% of the balance. So if your credit card limit is $500, you shouldn't use more than $50 at most, or under. Try and use $50 and under. I know they say 30%, but I think people should kind of keep it below 10%. You should not max out a credit card. It's not good. Never max out a credit card. If your limit is 500, it should not be at 500. It should be nowhere near 500. Like I said, you try and keep it low unless you have to use the card, and just make sure, you know, that you pay it off. But you always try to keep your card below 30%. But for me, I say people should keep their credit card below at least 10% and below. Okay. So that means you can reduce your interest rate. It's best that you keep it low to reduce your interest rate, because the higher the balance is, the more interest you're paying. So if you have a $500 balance, and let's say you're only paying the minimum, it will take you forever to pay that credit card off. If you know you're going to use a credit card to the max, if it's 500, you should be paying it off the next month, or every 2 weeks, or every week, you should make a payment on your credit card to keep your utilization low. Okay. Also, when it comes to budgeting, you should also budget for, to have fun, to do fun things that you like to do. Some people like to go to the movies, some people like to go to the museum, some people like to eat out for fun. That's my thing. I like to eat out for that's my fun. So you always have to budget in for that. You may not go out as much, but at least budget it for, let's say, at least once a month. If maybe you were going out every week, you could do it at least once or twice a month, because the goal is just to kind of budget and get yourself on track. All right. And another tip is you should save first, then you spend. So when you get paid, and I try to tell my clients, when you get paid, you save first and then you spend. Not, but I think most people do it in reverse. I used to do it too. You spend first and then you save. No, you should save first and then you spend. You have to think of savings as a fixed expense and factor that into your budget. Always factor that into your budget. You have to prioritize saving. It's crucial, and it's something that needs to be done all the time. You should always save first. It doesn't matter what it is, you always save first. Okay? Then you spend. Not the other way around. Because I used to spend first and then save, and then that wasn't working. So now we do the reverse. Another way to help you with your budgeting is, if you do not have one, you should have a retirement account, or start saving for a retirement account. If your employer has one, it's good if your employer has one where they match you, meaning that if you, let's say, you put $100 every paycheck, some employers can match you 100%, some employers can match you 50%, but it's always best if your employer does match you do the max if you can. Like when I work for Intuit TurboTax, their 401k plan is excellent. They match you 100%. So, and I do the max. So I'm telling you, it's like it's just free money. So if your employer is matching you, do the max if you can, the 15% if you can. Not everybody can do the 15%, but if you can, try and just make the sacrifice. Maybe do 10%, maybe do 5%, and when you see you could handle the 5%, maybe go up to 10%. But if you can do the max of 15%, I suggest most people try and do the 15%, especially if your employer is matching you. And even if your employer doesn't offer a retirement account, there are accounts that you can have solo. They call them solo 401ks. And you could also have a 401k even if you have a business. So I'm going to talk about that in another episode, but you can also have a 401k even if your employer doesn't offer it for you. So that's no excuse for you guys not to have 401ks and retirement accounts. You can have one also if you're a business owner. Okay. Another way to help you with your budgeting and saving is to split your direct deposit. Now, when you get your direct deposit, I wouldn't advise you just get it all into one account. You should split it up. Split your some companies that you split it up to four different accounts. I would suggest you get, say, 50% into your main checking, then split another, what, 25%, let's say, to a savings. And even if you have a business, you can also set up to have direct deposit coming to your business. And guess what? That's going to look like your business is generating income, because they're just going to see the deposit come into your business bank account. I tell clients that all the time. Even if it's $25, if you get paid every week, have $25 every week come into your business bank account. So it looks like your business is generating income. It doesn't matter where it comes from. When they're looking at your bank statement, they're not going to say, oh, it's a direct deposit. No, it's just looking like there's income to your business, and it looks better for your business, especially when you're applying for loans and different things for your business. So if you can, if you get paid every week, have a portion of your check go to your business. If it's you're paid every 2 weeks, let's say you can do $50 or more, if you can, have that direct deposited to your business bank account, and that will show that your business is generating income, your business is generating funds. Even if your business is slow or it's not generating that, you can still say, look, my business, let's say you're trying to apply for a loan. They'll say, okay, your business may not have a certain amount, but they can see steadily, like every week, every 2 weeks, your company is generating money, you're getting funds into your business bank account. So that's another way to kind of split up your direct deposit, you know. So have 50% to one checking. You could have 25% go to a savings account, a high yield savings account. And then if you do have a business, have the other 25% go into your business bank account. But if your business is flourishing, it's not necessary. But if your business is in the beginning stages, I would suggest you do that. Just have, even if it's $25 every week, or even $25 every 2 weeks, or if you can do more, it's better, but still have something come into that. You just don't want to keep your business bank account dormant where there's no activity, because banks and different lenders look at that. They look at your, because when you apply for any kind of business loan, they look at the activity on your bank account, because they ask you for 3 to 6 months worth of your bank statements. So if they look at your business and they see there's only money coming in once a month, they're going to say this business is not viable. You're not generating enough funds. But if they can see, all right, once a week, once every 2 weeks, at least something's coming in, they'd be more inclined to, you know, give you a loan, because they see, okay, the money may not be that much, but they have steady income coming in for this business. All right. So you see, I'm giving you guys a good tip for your business. When you have your business and you have direct deposit from your employer, have some of your money go to that business checking account as a direct deposit, okay? And that's legal to do. I'm not telling you guys to do anything illegal. That is legal to do. You can have some money from your payroll deposited to your business checking account. And also, if you're making deposits to your business checking account from your personal checking account to your business checking account, you should always write a check. And in the memo part, always put loan for and the company's name. Always put loan for, like you could put, I would write out a check from my personal checking account to my business, which is the Jill Collection. And I would write in the memo part, loan for the Jill Collection. So then it looks like you're getting, you know, you can actually write that money off for your taxes. Okay, because it is a loan and you can write that off. Okay. So you see, I'm giving you guys a lot of good tips. I hope you guys are writing these things down. All right. Now, when it comes to budgeting and planning for a large purchase, I would suggest that you plan ahead and not be impulsive to, you know, when it comes to like maybe a TV or a computer, unless you really, really need it. You know, some people during tax time, they like to get new furniture all of a sudden. Nothing was wrong with their furniture before, but people just like to buy big ticket items when they have a lot of money for some reason. I don't know why. So when you have a large purchase and you're budgeting, you should budget in advance. Like say, okay, we're in April now. I want to buy a TV. You can set a goal for, let's say, September to buy that TV. So then you have a couple of months to budget for that TV instead of spending. You might have an extra $1,000 to pay for the TV, but if you could budget and save, it's better. So anytime you have a large purchase, it's always better that you try to save for as long as you can for that big purchase, all right? Even if it means $5 a day, you want to save, or $10 a day, it's worth it. You know, if you can see, if you can budget for those larger purchases, it's always best that you can budget, all right? Now, sometimes when you're budgeting, things come up, things that you can't help, emergencies. So it's always best when you're budgeting and these things do come up that you're able to kind of have a backup plan for your budgeting. Like, okay, let's say an emergency comes up and you were saving, you were budgeting, you had a little money saved and an emergency happened. You can't avoid that. Take care of the emergency and just get right back on your budgeting. You know, just pick back up where you left off, continue with your budgeting. If you have to double up, if you have to triple up, do what you have to do to get back on track, because it's very important that you have to get on a budget, whether it's just for personal or even if it's for a business, you have to be on a budget, especially if you're planning to start a business. You need to know how to budget your money, okay? And also, some people, they get paid. Let's say you have a 9-to-5 and you get paid and your income is not always the same. Most people, their income is the same, but some people, it varies. Maybe you get paid commission or your income just fluctuates. Always have your budget set that way where you can accommodate for either if 1 week or every 2 weeks you might get an extra 500, maybe the next 2 weeks you might get, you know, less. Always plan your budget where it can fit, you know, those times when you might make a little bit more or you might make a little bit less. If that's the kind of budget that you have, you know, some people they're working, or some people they, even if you're a self-employed, you know, your budget will not always be the same. And also when you're setting up your goals for budgeting, try to be realistic. If you know you're trying to save, let's say $10,000, and you're giving yourself 6 months, that's not really realistic to save $10,000. You can do it if you're dedicated and you have the money and you can, and you can go on a strict budget. I've seen people do it, but realistically, if you know that's not something you can do for your situation, don't try and put yourself in that to say, okay, I can save $10,000 in 6 months. You have to be realistic. Even if you say, okay, I could save in 6 months, let me try and save $1,000. And you never know, maybe you could save over that amount, but at least set the minimum and say, okay, for the next 6 months, I want to try and save at least $1,000 as an emergency fund. Maybe you'll save more, but just be realistic, because I see a lot of people say they want to save $10,000 in 6 months. You can't, even a year, you may not be able to do it. Some people can. Some people can. I did a challenge last year just with myself, and I did it. But, you know, not everybody is that dedicated. Not everybody can do that. So you have to be realistic when you're setting these goals about your savings. And you should have a goal set. If it's every 3 months, if it's every 6 months, if it's 12 months, set a goal how much you want to save. And if you save more, great. If you didn't make your goal, it's still good. You just know you have to, maybe you could double up, see places where you could double up or see expenses that you can cut out, you know, maybe not order as much Uber Eats, you know, because we all do it. But if you could cut back, you'll see how much money you can actually save. Okay. And this next tip is something that I do very, very, very often. I actually did it last year. I did it for 30 days, and it's no spending. No spending means exactly what it says, a day where you spend zero, nothing. Now, when I say no spend, meaning your transportation, of course, if you're going to work or wherever you're going, you have to spend for that. That's fine. But when I say no spend, mean you're not buying outside food. If you're at work, you're going to bring your lunch. You're going to make sure all you have is your transportation to go and come from work. No, you have to not spend anything for that whole day. I know it's hard. A lot of people can't do it, but you should try and do it at least. Start off small. Start off once per week. Do 1 day no spend. Then if you could get through 1 week, do the next week, try 2 days no spend. I did 30 days. No spend. I did not spend. I'm telling you, I did not spend anything for the whole 30 days. All I spent was my fare to go to work. I brought my lunch. I didn't spend any, like, I made sure all the things that I would need for that month, I pre-bought everything, stuff for the house, personal items. I had everything. I did not spend for a whole 30 days. And would you believe that that was the time when I went out? I went to functions, but guess what? I went to functions that were either in walking distance from my house, close to me. I didn't have to spend a lot of money. And I also went to a lot of events. Don't judge me, but I went to a lot of events where they had food and drinks. So I didn't have to buy food or drink. I think for that month, I went to at least 6 events. And they were all free and they had food and drinks. And that's what I did for that month. So, you know, you can do the no spend. Anybody can do it. You know, I think I'm going to try and set up a challenge for May, maybe a few days, no spend. And you'll just see how good you feel. And yeah, just a day of no spending. All you do is you spend your fare to go to work. And you do not buy lunch. Because, you know, if you buy lunch, we buy breakfast. You buy lunch. Sometimes people buy things after work. You can spend at least $30 to $40 per day just buying lunch. That's another way people should monitor their spending. You know, not buying lunch at work. You buy your coffee in the morning. You know, you buy lunch. And lunch, you're spending at least $15 to $20 at least. Lunch could be another $10, $12. So you do spend a lot of money when it comes to buying lunch at work. So I'm trying to get people to bring their lunch, cook more, bring their lunch, all right? So you don't have to spend that money. All right, so no spend. All right, so we did that, no spending. Now, something that I do often is cash stuffing and using a cash-only budget. I know a lot of people are not used to cash only or cash stuffing because they feel like, you know, we're so used to swiping our card. But if you get back into the habit of actually spending cash, you'll really see where your money is going and you'll probably spend less. Or if you say, okay, for the week, I can only spend $100 in this envelope. That's it. That's all you spend. So what if you spend that $100 by Tuesday, you know, you have the whole week to go now without any money. So you have to budget yourself. I think people should really try the cash stuffing or like actually stuffing cash in envelopes or just trying to use more cash for things and stop using your debit card. Because with your debit card, you tend to forget and you do tend to overspend. And that's how a lot of times you end up paying overdraft fees on your bank account. You know, and we've all been there where, you know, you're thinking you had this amount in your account and then you just overspend or sometimes things come out twice out of your account. You know, a lot of people do bill pay and, you know, you forgot something's supposed to come out of your account and you already spent the money. So let's go back into using cash only or cash stuffing where you actually go to the bank, get the money out. And say, okay, for the next week or the next 2 weeks, you could actually put them. If you want, some people, they use cash stuffing every day, or you can do it by the week. It's up to you. But I think everybody should try the cash stuffing or only using cash and only using your card if it's an emergency. Okay, so for May, I want us to try that. Okay, no spend. Try a no spend day or two or week. And also try using more cash. Okay, cash only. No debit cards, no credit cards, only cash. Okay, we're only going to use cash, all right? And also, you have to factor in when you're budgeting for emergencies. Make sure you have something set up for emergencies, you know, especially if you have a vehicle. You know, I deal with a lot of clients and when it comes to vehicles, you know, that could wipe you out. A lot of times people, they just got paid and their car starts acting up. Something's wrong with the car. So that's another $500, $600, sometimes $1,000 because you need your car to move around. You know, you need your car if you're doing a business and you use your car, you're going to need it. So, you know, you always have to, that's why I tell people who have cars, really have an extra kind of cushion for that car. Because if you're not buying a new car and you're buying a secondhand car, most likely you're going to have issues with that vehicle. I'm not saying all the time, but most times you're going to have some issues. And, you know, these mechanics, they charge a lot. You know, not everything can be fixed for $100. You know, I had a friend, she had a vehicle and it seemed like every other month it was something wrong with the vehicle. It was tire, it was this, it was, and it wasn't $100 or $200, you know, and she ended up having to give up the car because of that. You know, she couldn't afford it. You know, that's another thing. You have to see if really even having a car is worth it, you know, between the insurance, then if something goes wrong with the vehicle, that's an extra expense to me. And I realize that people are paying a lot of money for cars. People do pay a lot of money. I was watching this show online and they were interviewing people, and this one guy said his finance is $1,000 just for the vehicle. That's not even insurance. That's crazy to me. But, you know, some people, they want certain vehicles. So, you know, just be mindful when you do have a car that you're going to be spending a lot of extra money when it comes to having a vehicle, especially if it's not a new vehicle. You're going to end up spending some money. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back. All right. Hey, what's up, you guys? It's your girl, Chrissy, here to let you know that the Even Rush Network now has an app. Yes, an app, you guys. So you can stay connected on the go and watch all your favorite podcast shows. You can download the app at Google Play Store or Apple iTunes. So spread the word. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Also, if you're looking to start a podcast and really don't know how, well, hit us up at the Even Rush Network at gmail.com and inquire about time slots, pricings, and everything you may need to get started. We got you. Join the winning team, the Even Rush Network. And also, download that app. What are you waiting for? Get to it.
You're now listening to the Evening Rush.
All right. That was a quick little break. So I also wanted to talk about, you know, tax season is finished. Well, technically, people are still filing their taxes, but there's a few things that I wanted to speak about, a few things that I saw this season that I said these are things that I definitely have to address. Number one is waiting until tax day to try and file your taxes and you know you have a complicated situation, it's not the best thing to do. So I really refrain from people trying to file their taxes on the deadline, the day of, and you know you have a complicated situation. Like I had a lady, she called in and she wanted to file her back taxes. She wanted to file 21, 22, and she wanted to do 20, 23. And it was like 11. I remember it. I looked at the time because when she started saying she wanted to do her back years, and I looked at the time, it was 11:35 on April 15th. And this woman wanted to do all of those taxes before 12 o'clock. So I had to be brutally honest with her. I said, ma'am, you won't be able, you know, even if you were just doing your 23 return, you wouldn't be able to do it before 12 o'clock. You know, I had to tell her, like, you had all these months to file. Why would you wait until the last minute? And you know you want to file back returns. You know, she was upset, but, you know, there's nothing I could do for her. You know, you can't wait until the last minute. Like, you have 3-4 months to file your taxes and you wait until, you know, the last minute. Why? Every year. Actually, tax day, I worked up until, well, we worked the Sunday. Sorry, we worked the Sunday and the Monday until 4 a.m. the next day. That's how many people were trying to rush and file it. People need to stop. You know when taxes are, you have to file your taxes, do it early. Then you know you have issues. Why would you wait until the last minute? I had a gentleman call me. He didn't get his W-2. And this is the last day to file your taxes. you had all these months. I said, sir, you can get a copy of your W-2. You can go to the IRS and they can provide you with a copy of your W-2. You know, but in his mind, he's thinking it's something that we can do. When I say we, TurboTax. I said, no, sir, that's something you have to do. We can't get you a copy of your W-2 for you. That's something you have to do. And then you're waiting the tax deadline to try and get something like that. I said, you had January, you had February, you had March. You know, why didn't you try and, you know, I don't remember what he said, but I was just amazed that people wait until the last minute to do their taxes, and they know they have complicated, you have complicated issues. Another thing is, a lot of customers, they were getting letters from the IRS that there was an issue with their 22 return, but they didn't open it until a little bit before the tax deadline for this year. So I had a lot of calls like that too. And I'm like, ma'am, did you open up the letters? She's like, no, I've been getting them for like 3-4 months and I just opened up the letter. And they said that there's an issue with my 22, so it was never submitted. There's nothing we can do. You know, there's nothing I can do. You have to read. When you get letters from the IRS, you have to open it up and read it. You have to. Every letter that you get from the IRS, you have to read it, because it could be something important. Sometimes it's really nothing. Sometimes it's just, they're just sending you a newsletter. But anytime you get something from the IRS, always open it up, because you never know what it can be. A lot of times people owe things, or they're telling you there was a problem with your return from the previous year and it was never filed correctly. So now you have no return for 22 and now you're trying to file 23. You see how the problem happens? So any letter you get from the IRS, please, please, I'm begging you guys, open it up and read it. And if you don't understand what the letter is stating, because I know sometimes these letters, they're kind of confusing, because even for me, sometimes when I used to look at IRS letters, it's a little confusing. You can always call the IRS, go on the website. There's so much information on the actual IRS website. You can go there, go to the IRS, go to a tax professional, go to a CPA. If you get a letter and you don't understand, if you have anything, you can reach out to me. I can help you the best I can. You know, if you get a letter and you just don't know what it is, I can help you. You know, like I said, I can help the best I can. Or I could also refer you. I know a lot of CPAs are the people who I can refer them to if it's something that I can't handle or something that I'm not familiar with. So, you know, anytime you get a letter, please, 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 I'm begging you guys, look at it. Sometimes people's returns are getting rejected because they can't verify your, sometimes your identity is not verified sometimes. That's another reason why they may send you a letter, because they can't verify your identity. When you're filing your tax returns, you have to keep everything the same. Like if you file with your first name, your middle name, and your last name, you should always file that way. But if 1 year you file just your first name and your last name, and you leave out the middle name, the IRS could say, this is not you. You have to verify your identity. The IRS is very, very particular when it comes to stuff like that. So if you always file first, middle, last, continue to file that way. Any year you switch it up, the IRS will reject that return and say, it's not you. And then you have to verify yourself. And that's what happened with a lot of people. If you guys noticed, I believe it was Atlanta, or one of those states where a lot of people had to be verified because there was some discrepancy either with their date of birth or their social, or a lot of times it's a dependence information is incorrect. And they got these letters, but they went on the last day. When you get these letters, do not wait until the last day. They had so much time to get verified. And you see what happened? They waited until the last day. And then they couldn't get through. Another thing is, if you see you're going to file your return late, file an extension. Even if it's like a week before the deadline for taxes, file an extension. It's free. File an extension is free. All you have to do is go on to, you can either file it through the IRS itself, or if you're using, let's say you use TurboTax, you could just go on file your extension, and that's it. And when you file your extension, you get you can file your return up to October 15th. That's when the extension is until October 15th. So please, please, for next year, if you guys see that you're going to be late with your filing your return, or you realize you have information that's missing, or you need to get certain information, just file the extension. Another thing too, a lot of people, they were running and jumping early and filing their return, and they were receiving documents later on. Some people for the season, they had to do an amendment two or three times. And that just messes up your return. When I say return, your tax return. Wait a little bit. If you know you're supposed to get certain documents, or maybe a W-2, a lot of people are running and jumping early and filing their return. And then they're getting a lot of either 1099s they were getting late. They were getting a lot of K-1s late. A K-1 is when you have a business, like an S-Corp or a corporation or a partnership. A lot of the K-1s were late. You know, there's certain, there's a lot of different forms for different states where sometimes it does come in a little late. So I always tell people, you don't have to rush and jump and do your return in January. Wait a little bit. Even wait till like end of February, March, because that's when a lot of these forms do come in. Some people even, they receive their W-2, you know, kind of late. So, you know, it's not necessary to really run and jump early and file your return. If you can wait a little bit, I suggest people should wait to do their return. Another thing, I know a lot of people, they're used to doing everything on their phone, but I'm just telling you, security-wise, you should not do your taxes on your cell phone. This is just me personally. I feel that when you do something like your taxes on your cell phone, you kind of open yourself out. Your information is out there. Because remember, whatever app you're using to file your taxes, you have to put in your social, you have to put in your date of birth, you're putting in your kids' information, you're putting in your job information, you're putting in your home, you're putting in if you have a mortgage. That's a lot of information. And this is being, you're submitting it through your cell phone. You know, just think about it. I know most people, they're used to doing things on their cell phone, but when it comes to stuff like that, try not to use your cell phone. And also when you're using your cell phone and you're calling in, like for me, for TurboTax, when I work for TurboTax, and you're trying to get assistance on the cell phone, it's very, very difficult. Most times I have to tell customers, you're going to have to move to either a laptop or a desktop, because on the cell phone, the screens come out different. And a lot of times the information is not all there because the screens are set up different on a cell phone. So this is just my personal opinion. When you're doing something like your taxes, do not do it on a cell phone. Please, I'm begging you guys, do not do it on a cell phone. I just think all your information is out there and, you know, it's being done. Yes, the apps could say they're safe or they're, but still, I just feel like, you shouldn't do your taxes on a cell phone. Okay. That's just my personal opinion. You know, I had a customer not this season before, he was doing his taxes on his Xbox. And he was having issues because there's no keep. I guess he used it. I'm not a video games person, but I guess he was trying to use the controller and there were certain parts of the return where he wasn't able to enter. So, you know, I had to ask him, like, so, you know, I'm trying to navigate him. I'm like, okay, what is your computer saying? He's like, oh, no, I'm not on a computer. I'm on an Xbox. So I said, sir, you're going to have to move to a computer. You shouldn't be doing your taxes on an Xbox. So that's just my personal opinion. You should not do your taxes on a cell phone. You should do it either on a tablet, a laptop, or a regular desktop. And another thing, a lot of customers were doing their taxes in a public library. I would not suggest you do your taxes in a public library. Even though they say the networks are safe and secure, I would not advise anyone to do their taxes in a public domain like a library. I just wouldn't suggest that. I had a couple of customers and they were actually in a library doing their taxes. And I couldn't tell them, you know, I couldn't say anything, but, you know, you can't really I just feel you shouldn't do your taxes on a public, it should be your personal computer, or if you're going to someone's office, you know, of course their computer is safe, or they have virus, different things on their computer. If the software is safe, so your information is safeguarded within the software, so you don't have to worry about that. But I wouldn't suggest, you know, doing your taxes on an open network like a library, you know, because you could log off and maybe your information is still there, and you know, you're putting a lot of information on your tax return. So that's I wouldn't suggest you doing that. I had a lot of customers who were filing their business returns, and I realized that a lot of people who have businesses, they're not keeping accurate bookkeeping, because I was helping this guy with his business return, and so I'm asking him, I'm saying, okay, how much did you pay for advertising? How much did you pay for equipment? How much did you pay for supplies? And he's like, okay, wait a minute, hold on. I have to go get the receipts and calculate them. Mind you, you're on the phone call with me. That phone call was almost 4 hours I was on the phone with him, because I had to wait for him to stop for every category, and he had to actually calculate all of his receipts, or he had some book, and I had to tell him, I said, sir, you have to have some kind of bookkeeping system. This is not going to work when you're doing your taxes. You know, you have to have everything ready. Either you have it on an Excel sheet, you have some kind of bookkeeping. You know, I even suggested to him to use QuickBooks, because QuickBooks is a partner with TurboTax. I said, you could use QuickBooks, and when you're ready to file your taxes, you can import all of your information from QuickBooks straight to your tax return, and it would make life a whole lot easier. Like every category that he had to enter something for, he had to physically go through his book or go through his receipts and calculate them. And mind you, this is like a year's worth of receipts. And I said, sir, you know, I don't mind helping you, but you know, I was on, my manager was like, that call was almost 4 hours. I was like, yeah, because when you listen to the calls, and she was like, yeah, I listened to the call, and I see, but you know, next time you really can't, that's not our job. You know, my job is just to help you along the way when you get stuck, but you have to organize yourself. When you have a business, you have to keep it organized. You can't wait until tax time to now recreate a whole year. Because number one, it's frustrating. Number two, you don't want to do it. And number three, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to leave things out. Because I had a lot of customers had to do an amendments for 22 because they missed something. You know, you have to be organized. Even if you're not doing your bookkeeping every week or every 2 weeks, you should at least do it every month or every other month. Try and do your bookkeeping for your business. It will save you a lot of headaches in the long run, you know, and you shouldn't wait until tax time to now try and recreate your income for a whole year, because that's a lot of work. And if you go to a CPA or if you go to a tax preparer to do that for you, they charge you a lot of money to do that. Because when I was working for Liberty, we used to do that, but we would charge the customer extra. Like we would help them recreate their books for a whole year, but they had to pay extra for that. We had to actually help them recreate it for a whole, you know how much work that is to help somebody recreate their books and go through all of these receipts and bank statements for a whole year? It was a lot of work. I mean, it was a lot of work, but you also get to learn a lot too. So that's why when you have your business, you have to be up to date with your records. You can't wait until tax time to want to recreate everything that happened for a whole year. It just doesn't make sense to me, and it's too much work, and people get frustrated, and then you want to curse, and you can't be mad at me because you didn't want to do your bookkeeping for a whole year. You know, if you have a business, if you can't do the bookkeeping yourself, you're going to have to hire someone. Or there's a lot of bookkeeping apps. You can do that. Or I tell people, you can just get an Excel sheet. Just do an Excel sheet every month. Jot everything that you spend and put it on an Excel sheet. And, you know, if you have a tax preparer or if you have a CPA, they can work off of that, you know. But you have to. You can't have a business and you're not keeping any records, because you have to know what's coming in and you have to know what's going out. You have to. Something else that I saw a lot this season, customers are not taking advantage of the home office deduction. And if you guys remember in previous shows, I said you have to take the home office deduction. That is there for small businesses. It doesn't make sense you have a small business and you're not taking that deduction. That's why the IRS created it. Because they say, we know you're a small business, even if you have a brick and mortar store, we figure you're going to do some kind of work from home, whether it's a room, whether it's just a little tray in the corner of your bedroom. Some people turn their living room into their office and they take that deduction, because the deduction also works off of the square footage of the room. Some people turn their living room into an office. But of course, if you are going to do that, you have to provide proof, because you never know, in case you get audited, the IRS is going to want to say, okay, you have this big office space, we need proof. So if you're going to make your living room into an office, you better make sure that it's really an office and not just saying that. Some people turn the bedroom, they have a little corner, they measure the square footage. If you have an extra room, great. For me, I have a whole extra bedroom that I turn into my office. So that's what I use. I use the actual square footage of this whole room, because I do use it as a legit office for my businesses. And you can also claim it for more than one business. So I use it for my business coaching. I use it for my my vegan cosmetics line and my other businesses that I do. I use that same space and I can claim that deduction for all of these businesses, because I am working from home. And, you know, when you're taking the home office deduction, it's also better, like, if you have a phone line in that office, it's in your business name. If you have more than one business, it should be in one of your businesses' name. Like, for me at home, I have my phone, internet, and cable in my business name. So I get to write all of that off as an expense for my business. Okay, I write that off. If you can get your utilities in your business name, you can write a portion of that off. You can also write off a portion of your rent because you have a home office. You know, any upgrades you make to the office, some people, they have an office space in their home that's big enough to put, a fridge, or if you paint the room, if you have to get a desk, if you have to get a computer, any kind of upgrades for that room, you can deduct. You can deduct it for your home office. And I notice a lot of small businesses are not claiming that deduction. And that's what it's there for. You know, it's for small businesses, small business owners, I should say. You should always take that deduction. It's called the home office deduction. And it just means that you have a dedicated space that you do work from home, whether it's a whole room, whether it's a living room, whether it's just a little computer desk in a corner of your bedroom, but it has to be a dedicated space that you use, for your business, because they know when you have a business, you're going to need somewhere to, you know, check your emails. You're going to need somewhere to make phone calls. Even if you have a brick and mortar, you're still going to do work from home. And especially if you just have an online business, they know you're working from home, because where else are you going to work? You have to be working from home. You know, so, you know, you guys, for next season, if you did not claim it, you should be claiming the home office deduction for your business. Also, I noticed that a lot of business owners are not for meals and transportation. That's also a part of your business. For me personally, my when I do use Uber Eats or any kind of ordering app, I have it in my business name, so I can deduct every single meal. Also, if you use Lyft or any ride share, every trip for me is a business trip because I have it in a business account. It's in my business name. I can deduct all of those rides. You know, so there's little things you can do to kind of help, you know, especially for the people who are vendors. You go to different pop-up shops or different markets, like on the weekends, you know, you should be deducting your car fare. Anything that you spend related to that event, you can deduct. Whenever I'm going to an event, either to sell my cosmetics or a speaking event, I deduct everything for that day. Everything I eat, everywhere I travel, everything I do is a deduction. Even what I'm wearing, it can be a deduction. If I'm going to do my nails before the event, it's a deduction because it's a part of your business. You know, as a business owner, if you're going to an event, you have to look good. You have to do your hair. You have to do your nails. You might need a new outfit, even your dry cleaning. These are all deductions within your business that you should be claiming for. Okay? Claim those meals. Claim any kind of travel. Even if you're not using Uber or Lyft, some people still do, like, you know, car service. If you could try and get a receipt from them somehow, try and get a receipt. Try and get some. Receipts are very, very crucial when you have your business. You have to have a receipt for everything. I don't care if it's a dollar, if it's 5 cents. Keep your receipts for everything. That's why you need a bookkeeping system or a bookkeeping app. QuickBooks is good for that because they have an actual app and you could take a picture of the receipt and it will automatically upload it to your account if you have QuickBooks. So if you have the QuickBooks, you get the app, take a picture of your receipt and it will automatically upload it and categorize it how you have your QuickBooks set up. Okay, so that's another option if you don't want to be worried about, you know, having to keep track of all these receipts. Get a bookkeeping app. It will make life so much easier for you, for your business, you know, even for personal. Sometimes people have, you know, have bookkeeping apps just to kind of make sure they're spending, they're not overspending on the spending, or just to keep, you know, keep a track of what they're doing. So that's about it for taxes, you know. Just make sure you hold on to all of your receipts. If you're a small business, you should be claiming the home office deduction. Make sure you're claiming any kind of transportation, any meals, also your mileage. If you have a vehicle that you use for business purposes, you have to keep track of your mileage. If you can, if you have a vehicle, you should be transferring it to your business name. You could just transfer the title to your business name. And a lot of times, if you're financing your vehicle and you transfer it over to a business, it is a little bit cheaper. So your finance would be a little bit cheaper and your insurance would be a little bit cheaper. So that's also an option you could check out, you know, if you're paying a lot. See, you know, just see the whatever company you go to, just ask them, like, if I was to, you know, transfer it over to a business, you know, what my numbers would be. And most times it will be a lot less, you know, a lot less depending on the company that you're with and the certain vehicle that you have. You would pay a little bit less for your finance and your insurance. So I want you guys to work on budgeting for May. May, you're going to try and do some no spend days. We're also going to try and do some cash only. If you could do cash only days or cash only week, or if you could try and do the whole month, we're going to try and do a no spend day. If you can, try and do a no spend week. But what you would do is just plan ahead. Like if you know for May, you're going to do no spend for a week. Make sure you get everything that you're going to need. And then you're going to do the no spend in May. Try to go a day. If you can make it a day, try 2 days, try 3 days, then try a week. Then if you went a whole week and you were good. If you have kids, you know, make sure you get everything ready for your kids too. You know, they're part of it too. No spend, because you know with kids, they do spend and they're not thinking. You know, they're like, oh, mommy and daddy's money. I could just, no, if you could get them from early to learn, you have to budget. You know, if you give them an allowance, or maybe you should start telling them, look, mommy or daddy's only going to give you, depending on how old they are, maybe $20 a week. And you let them know, look, if you want to buy stuff, you only have $20. And that would help them to also start budgeting and saving. You know, it would teach them that they only have $20, or if it's $10, they got to make a stretch. I say even give them five and tell them, look, that has to stretch for the whole week. And then they'll see the value, you know, of a dollar. They'll see the value that, you know, you can't just overspend. You know, we got to start teaching our kids from early. If they're like 5, 6, 7, you know, definitely start them to learn about budgeting and not just spending mommy and daddy's money. Because, you know, when that happens, when they get to be adults now, and, you know, they never learned any how to spend, how to budget properly. And, you know, it happens. So just we're going to work on that. Okay, yes. And this Saturday. And this Saturday, I will be at 333 Lounge with my cosmetics company, the Jill Collection. So you can come out. I'll be there from 1 to 6. And then on May 18th, I will be speaking at the More Money's Artist Showcase. They're going to have models, vendors. I'm going to be speaking. It's going to be from 12 to 9. That's on May 18th. And it's going to be 563 Sterling. All right. So you can definitely check it out on my page. There'll be more information. And thank you for tuning in to Stacy Talks Money Podcast. Thank you for tuning in this week, and I hope to see you next week.